There is no heroism. There is no justice. There is no heaven. Galen wasn't dressed in black. It wasn't night. He wore a plain blue tradesman's tunic and a big, worn hat, and he had his cloak draped over his lap. He was sitting on the ruined base of an old statue, long since torn down, and eating a loaf of bread and cutting sausage to go with it. The sun was going down, and this Warren's market bordering the Plith River was beginning to close for the day. A few stalls would stay open for another hour or so, hawking hot food for those heading home. But the boat shops that came and docked and sold their wares were already pushing off, not willing to spend the night docked in the crime-ridden Warrens. It was busy, but not packed. Galen saw his target enter the market from the far side. He was a plain man, could have been a tradesman himself. But Guinevere's sketch had been very good. It was the wet boy Nils Skelling. He was reputed to be the best man alive with an axe, despite his small stature. Great climber, fearless swimmer, excellent in unarmed combat, said to have killed 15 Lycanocht lancers with his bare hands. Said to have quite a sense of humour, too. Nils was walking along the edge of the pier. The crowd tended to be thinner there, because sometimes when the crowd suddenly swelled, those at the edge would get pushed into the sewage-befouled water. A wet boy wasn't worried about such a thing. There is no sixth sense. There is no hell but life. And death is worse. Galen coughed a few times, pounded his chest, and walked, still eating, cutting a piece of sausage. Among the bustling, wheezing, sniffling masses, he might as well have been invisible. The wet boy passed between Galen and the water. In his eyes, Galen saw murder. It was enough. Galen slammed the knife into the man's kidney. A lethal blow, and so painful you couldn't cry out. In an instant, with the hand under his folded cloak, Galen clipped a lead weight to the wet boy's belt, and with a hand of magic, he propelled the man gently toward the water. Still walking purposefully, putting distance between them, Galen faked another loud coughing fit to draw attention to himself, as the wet boy sank to his knees and slipped right off the pier into the water. The slight sound of him hitting the waves was covered by Galen's coughing. The weights dragged the body into the depths, and it was done. There is no glory. There is no light. There is only victory.
"You can't tell me once you start killing," Ben Rabel said. "I'm still bound by my oath to the Shinga. If I know of a direct threat, I'll have to go report it. You understand? Not I'll have to do it because I'm so honorable. It's a magical compulsion."
Clever Ben Rabel. He knew exactly the bounds of his compulsion, and with Galen, he was pressing right against them.
"If the Shinga orders it, I'll have to try to kill you, Galen. So you need to do your business before they even know it. I won't have taught you everything, but if you're successful, I can teach you the rest at our leisure. I report to the Shinga in 2 weeks. He doesn't always remember to do so, but if he asks if I know of any threats to him, I'll have to answer honestly."
"Fair enough." 2 weeks, so the water clock was grinding away. Good. Galen liked to feel the press of time. It had been too long. Like most of the wet boys, Polus Merritt worshipped Nisus, the god of blood, semen, and wine. He was already half-drunk when Galen ran into him in the brothel. He was a big man, fatter than you'd expect a wet boy to be. But then his specialty was poisons and claymores. Another product of the death games. He'd been an apothecary who'd got too far into debt to the wrong people and had been forced into slavery, along with his wife and children. They hadn't made it. Galen knew no more than that, and didn't want to. When Polus had been pushed into the death games, no one thought he'd last a day. But he'd taken to it with relish. Now he was 45, bald, paunchy, still powerful under the fat, and with a massive talent. He took a deep drink of a sethy red, looked down the bar at Galen.
"You've got a dangerous look about you," Polis said.
"Bugger off, you're not my type," Galen said. He had seen the man's eyes. There was murder guilt there. It was enough. Polis scooted to a seat closer to Galen.
"You know how other gifts sometimes come along with the talent?"
"Hey, fuck off."
"I got a bit of prophecy. Not enough to be useful, you know, just glimpses. My wife, dead. Things like that, to keep me up late at night. I had this vision that I was going to be killed by 40 men all at once. Queer, huh? But now that you're here, I see there just you. Derzu Blint."
What? That wasn't a name Galen had ever had. It wasn't a name he'd ever even heard. Polis Merritt chuckled quietly, drunkenly.
"Don't suppose I could stop you. You know, it's foretold now and all."
He grinned.
"Worst times to go, I guess. My favourite girl was working tonight. She did me right. This wine could have been better, but meh."
Polis shrugged, pulled out his coin purse, put it on the bar and waved to the server, a woman in a low-cut dress.
"See this all gets to Anesha, would you?"
"You drunk, Polis?" the server asked.
He smiled at her, shook his head. When she left, Polis turned back to Galen.
"I don't ask you to make it fair. Gods know I don't deserve that. But I'd appreciate it if you make it quick."
Galen looked at him like he was crazy, but he felt transfixed. A talent in prophecy. If the man started shouting everything he saw, Galen could be wrecked instantly. 40 men in one. Who could that be but an immortal?
"I'm going to go for a walk," Polis said, "down along the river."
He got up. After the man left, Galen went out the back way quickly in case Polis was setting up an ambush in front or in back. The man wasn't there. Galen made it up to the rooftops, jumping from wall to wall. He strung his long bow and checked his arrows. True to his word, Polis Merritt was walking slowly, not two blocks away, along the edge of the plith. A quiet section where it would be easy to dispose of the body, 100 paces away.
"You're better than this. This isn't you, Achilles."
"It is now." Half a breath out, the blessed stillness before murder. He released the arrow, perfect shot, base of the skull. Instant death. Polis crumpled. When he went to roll the body into the river, Galen found a note in Polis's hand. It had just 2 words.
"Thank you."
Nigh unto 7 centuries ago, there was a magical conflagration at the fall of Traetel, the Battle of the Black Barrow. Magic to blot out the sun, to rend the earth. Magic seen 200 leagues away and felt across the oceans. It was said that on that last day, having lost friends, wife and battle and hope, the Emperor Jorsin Alcestes took up the 2 greatest magical artifacts ever made or found. He was the first and only man ever to hold both at once. With them, his magical abilities, already legendary, were amplified 1,000-fold. He took in all the power of Ures and Kerok, and it killed him. But it didn't kill him alone. "What do you know of the Kakari?" I ask Ivo Vass, draining my 4th ale.
"I know about them," the freckled idiot says.
"Otherwise, why would I be talking with you? And you know everything about them, so why are you asking?"
"I know what I know. What I don't know is what you think you know. And if you use that tone again, you'll be picking it up from the floor."
"What tone?"
Ivor asks, petulant. My fist crosses the boy's jaw. He flies off his stool and lands flat on the floor. Most satisfying. "That tone," I say.
"You broke my fucking tooth," the boy complains.
His lips are bleeding. My knuckles, on the other hand, are pristine.
Odd.
Hot, barely restrained rage flares in his eyes. The boy picks himself up and takes a moment to master his anger. I watch his eyes closely. Finally, he says,
"There were 6 Kakari, one for each of Emperor Jorsin Alcestis, champions of light. They were created by Jorsin's archmage, Ezra, during the Battle of Black Barrow. The Society of the Second Sun believes they confer immortality. The bearers of the Kakari can still be killed, but if not killed, you live forever. Maybe not forever, but at least 700 years, which seems close enough to me. Most in the Society believe that you were originally Shrad Mardin, bearer of the Blue Kakari, friend of Jorsin Alcestis."
"Friend? Did you have friends, Jorsin? I thought I was one, but now I'm not so sure. And you? What do you believe?"
"I think you were and are Eric Daedral, the bearer of the Silver Kakari, impervious to blades and able to form them in your hands by thought alone.